Time to run.
The Extra Mile Podcast, Galloway Edition. Galloway Edition Extra Mile Podcast is a podcast for runners of all abilities who want to learn everything they can about the Galloway Run Walk Run training method, right from Jeff himself. This podcast will run walk you right through Jeff's 30-week marathon training schedule and gently get you to the finish line of your full marathon injury-free.
Hello, and welcome to episode 6. Of the Extra Mile Podcast, Galloway Edition. This is Kevin, your host, and I am out today on a gorgeous day in Cincinnati, low 80s, not a cloud in the sky, and very low humidity. And I've got about a 7.5 mile route laid out today using a 4-1 ratio. I've kind of settled in on a 4-1 for most of my quote-unquote longer stuff these days, just because it seems to be where I feel the most comfortable. Today's episode is going to cover weeks 16, 17, and 18 of the To Finish program from the Galloway Training Programs book. And within that time period, we've got a 17-mile long run, which is jumping up there pretty quick, huh? We've also got our fourth magic mile, and we're starting to get some good history on these magic miles. And I think you would agree they're starting to be very useful as far as what our paces really should be and what we can expect in our marathon. In this episode, we're going to catch up with Jeff as he scoots back and forth across the very hot state of Texas these days. And we're going to get his thoughts on these longer miles, as well as discuss the topics of speed work, and also hit on what all of you endurance athletes should be eating these days. We've got some really good questions to ask Jeff, and even a submission from fellow listener and friend of the show, Mike from Virginia Beach. Some other interesting things I want to talk about at the end of the show, so we will chat again then, and you'll enjoy your extra mile.
Hello, Jeff, Kevin, and all you Galloway extra milers. This is Mike from Virginia Beach, and I just wanted to call in today with a couple of words of appreciation. First of all, I wanted to thank Bob from Brockville, who's moving to Lynchburg, going to run the Rock and Roll and the Richmond Marathon, which, by the way, I'm going to be doing as well. He gave us that checklist in the last podcast on running form, and it made a world of difference in my fatigue level. It really kind of helped me a little bit. It gave me a couple of things to check up on, and I made a few adjustments based on his checklist, and my running seemed a lot easier. So thank you very much for that. And secondly, thanks so much for the Miracle Mile formula. I've been running up until now just using the website, Jeff Galloway's website, and reading a few charts. I finally did my Miracle Mile. I made my adjustment for my long run, and I made another adjustment for the heat because it gets pretty hot and humid in Virginia Beach. And I went out on a long run last weekend and made my adjustments with my interval timer. And I came back after a 12-mile run, and I really wasn't too tired. I was a little hot and sweaty, but I was feeling really good. So thank you all for that. It's been a great thing to adhere to, and maybe I need to listen a little bit more and read a little bit more. Word to the wise. So looking forward to the Richmond Marathon in November, and really enjoying the training program. So thanks, everybody.
Let's head over to the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition hotline, where we've got, once again, our very special guest, Mr. Jeff Galloway. Hi, Jeff.
Well, how you doing, Kevin?
I'm staying cool. How about you? Can you say the same?
No, I'm in Texas now, and Texas has had a string of 100-plus days, and I lucked out. I got to experience some real Texas weather, but I got out early. I got my endorphins, and I'm feeling good in air conditioning as we do this.
Oh, yeah. Well, the last time we spoke, as I remember, you were heading to Vail shortly after our talk. How did that go? That was your first retreat in Vail, I think?
We have done them, I guess, one other time in Vail. The temperature, and we're talking middle of June, the temperature did not get above 59 degrees the whole time, which for those of us coming from really hot weather was a wonderful thing. And we had some great cool runs along the Gore Creek. They have a series of bike trails around there. One of the neat things for me is I had all types of flashbacks from the time I spent training for the Olympics and the Olympic trials in Vail. And I was able to tell a bunch of good stories to the folks there, and we had a really good time. Surprisingly, no one had any major issues with the altitude, and it was because we purposely cut back the run, walk, run to a very low level, and then everything worked.
Has the place changed since, what, the early 70s?
Oh, my gosh. In 1972, when I was there, there was only the little village of Vail, and it was tiny. Now, there's settlement all throughout the valley. It has gone from roughly about one half a mile in settlement along the creek to about 15 miles.
Wow.
They're everywhere. But there are more trails now, and it really is a beautiful place. We had a lot of trails that went up into the mountains, and they were gorgeous. You're just in another world in those Rocky Mountains.
Wish you'd have bought some cheap land back in those days, huh?
Oh, yeah. There are always those moments, but I like our Tahoe area too. So
that's coming up, right?
The good mountains. Yeah, it'll be going starting at the third weekend in July. So yes, right,
July 15th, if I'm not mistaken. I looked that up. I think it was.
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. You've got a marathon right before that, though.
I do, in Missoula, and I've been to Missoula many years before, too. I'm looking forward to coming back there and doing our July marathon in Missoula.
July
the
9th.
We head right on out to our Tahoe retreat.
You're getting to see some awfully gorgeous parts of the country, that's for sure.
Well, the thing that has really impressed me since I started going coast to coast and to a lot of events is that our great country has an amazing wealth of beautiful areas. I was earlier this week, I stayed on a ranch in the middle of Texas that the Presnell family has owned since 1866. It's just a real Texas ranch with horses. And it's just gorgeous land. It's just beautiful to run through, just to hang out on the porch.
You ever take a camera with you when you go on some of these runs, Jeff? That might be fun.
I used to. And, with the new technology, I just hadn't spent the time to download the pictures I've taken. I've got to learn how to do that.
Well, we're at episode 6 now, Jeff. We're moving by. This episode is going to cover weeks 16, 17, and 18 of the to finish schedule.
Great.
And in that time frame, our long run hits the 17-mile mark. And we've got our fourth Magic Mile. So let's talk about those two deals just real briefly.
Good.
The first thing that jumps out at me on the schedule, not just that it's 17 miles and it's really getting up there, but that at this mark, it goes to our long runs go to every 3 weeks instead of every 2 weeks, and they jump instead of every they jump in increments of 3 miles instead of 2 miles.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, once the long run reaches around 17 miles, I have found that you can hold the endurance for 3 weeks. So that means that you don't have to risk lingering fatigue by running those long ones every other week. And in fact, most people like that. And because you have those 3 weeks to prepare mentally and physically, we found that there's no problem in moving 3 miles additional instead of the 2 miles previously. And that's, of course, tied directly to taking the walk breaks as you need to take them.
The other thing is that strikes me is 17 miles is obviously a darn long way, and we're going to hit the 20-mile mark very, very shortly. Do you have are there any special tips about getting over this hump here? Because I think there is, like, at least a mental hump when we hit the 17 and 20-mile mark. I mean, does it help to run with a friend or with music or anything like that? Any tips?
Yes, it's always better I say not always, but in almost every case, if you're running with someone, you're going to talk, you're going to have a physical chemistry type situation where you pull off one another at various times. So these are very positive things. Some people who can't run with anybody and are out in the boondocks will carry their cell phone and they'll call friends as lifelines, as it were,
sure,
while they're out there. And then listening to music is another venue that works quite well. But you need to make sure that you are aware of possible challenges with traffic or, any safety problems,
right,
that could be there. Most people just keep one ear unplugged.
That's a good idea. And lastly, our non-long run weekends. In this 3 weeks, we have our 17-mile. We also have a Magic Mile. But then there's an off, quote-unquote, off week that on the schedule calls for 5 miles.
Yes.
What do we do on those off weeks? Is that we just really slow down? Do we still take walk breaks for our 5 miles? Any special thing about those off weekends?
Each person is empowered to really take charge over those shorter runs and do really whatever they want to. Some folks who are used to running faster will get out and run those 5 milers, 6 milers faster than they do on long runs. And some actually like to do some of the little acceleration gliders or whatever on the short weeks. And finally, if you have a finish time that is locked into the race that you've chosen,
mm-hmm,
it is a good idea on those short long run weekends to run some of the miles at the pace that is the closing pace time. For example, a lot of races will say you must finish at 6:30, 6 hours and 30 minutes or before. And if you feel challenged by that, let's give it a go. Let's get out there and try some miles at that pace, which is about 14 minutes per mile, doing a 30-30 or some ratio that works for you to make that happen.
For myself, I always mentally think to myself when I'm going on one of these, oh, it's only 5 miles. That seems silly to say it like that. Well, I'm only going 5 miles, so I tend to run a little bit faster than I don't know if it's faster than I should, but it's certainly faster than I normally do, just because, you know, it's an off week. It's kind of easy compared to the other weekends.
Perfectly okay to do that. So it's really based totally on how you're feeling. If you're feeling great and there aren't any downsides in your week, any challenges physically, then you could run fast. But it's also okay to run just as slow as you do on your long training runs. with the one exception that, again, if you feel challenged by the closing time of the race, it is good to do a race rehearsal and just see if you're in the ballpark.
We've also got our fourth Magic Mile. We're starting to build some good history. This will be obviously our fourth, and I'm assuming we're getting a lot of data now that we can use to determine, you know, some really strong indicators on what our race is really going to be like. Is there anything we should be doing different on this fourth one now that we're building up these Magic Miles?
The main concept is the continuing one, and that is to try to improve upon what you're doing. And as you start analyzing pacing and the little things you do with your stride to maintain good rhythm and to stay lower to the ground, touch lighter, you start to bring all these things together.
Let me change topics here just for a second, if I could. And it might not be a topic that is pertinent to all of our listeners, but I want to talk about speed work a little bit.
Yes.
You have an entire chapter in the book, the training programs book that we're using. It begins on page 122 on speed work. So to begin with, let me say that there is no speed work built into the to finish schedule that we're actually going by. Tell me, first of all, why is that?
The number of injuries increase dramatically when people start adding speed work. And for those who want to finish, just to finish, there's really no reason whatsoever to have that increased risk in your program. And furthermore, by doing speed work when you're just on a to-finish track, you start to develop the ego to project certain times that are not really that beneficial for you, because you'll find that you start to play ego games that push you a little too hard, often on your slow training runs when you really should be slowing down and just enjoying the ride.
Okay, so let's assume for a second that we are going to finish, or we are going to do a schedule that puts us on a time commitment here. What kind of speed work do you recommend? I know there's a lot of different stuff out there. I've seen, you know, 400s, 800s, and even in the experiment, I was fortunate enough to meet and get to talk to Bart Yasso for one of our podcasts, and obviously he's got the Yasso 800s that he's pretty famous for. Tell me a little bit about what you believe in as far as speed work.
There are many ways to develop speed, and I've tried probably most of them in my career. What I found is that the longer the distance of the event, the more effectiveness is gained from longer repetitions. And that means that when you're training for a 5K or a 10K, 400-meter reps are fine and work very well. When you move up to the half marathon, I've found that 800 meters or half-mile repetitions produce a better training effect to hang on to a hard pace at the end. And for the marathon, one-mile repetitions. Now, again, with Bart's program, you can definitely get some speed benefit, and I recommend Bart's program for a lot of my people who are training for half marathons as well as marathons.
Mm-hmm.
What they find is that the 800-meter repeats that he recommends, running at the speed that he recommends, is just about exactly what they need to improve their time in the half marathon. So this works well for people that are bouncing back and forth. Unfortunately, a lot of those folks who don't do any mile repetitions end up so well-tuned for the half marathon that they go out too fast in their marathon race. And I've definitely found that the one-mile repetitions, when you're building them all the way up to 14 of them, develop a pacing sense that keeps folks from going out too fast, both in the workouts and then in the race itself. The other major benefit of the one-mile repetitions, especially when you're building them up to 14 of them at the end, is that you're going to get into the same type of physical and mental fatigue that you're going to get into when you reach the last 4 to 5 miles of the marathon. And that's really the clincher for those on a time goal. That's where you either make your time goal or it breaks you. And unless you have had some experiences in training where you've had to hang on when you were really, really tired, it's less likely that you're going to be able to do that when you get into the race.
So we're going to be doing, or some people will be doing mile repeats. What kind of pace do they do those at? Do we use the magic mile to set that as well?
You could. However, once a person has run one or two races before at any given distance, let's just use the marathon since we've been talking about it, you can start with what has been your fastest marathon recently, and you take that per mile pace. And the most I usually see people improve is 30 seconds a mile. So you could start out by saying if they ran a 10-minute per mile pace, then a legitimate goal during the next 6 months would be a 9:30 per mile. That's totally legitimate.
Okay.
In order to achieve that through speed work, you really need to run 30 seconds faster than that. So those training for any marathon time per mile, I'm recommending run 30 seconds per mile faster than your goal pace is in the marathon.
Interesting. What about making adjustments for heat for our mile repeats?
Ah, very good to bring that up now, because most areas of the U.S. are really starting to experience some heat, and even some of my clients in Canada are going through that now too. First of all, I failed to mention that the repetitions, the rest between repetitions for the miles is a 5-minute walk, and for the half mile or 800s for the half marathon, a 3-minute walk in between. Now, for heat, the main goal in these repetition workouts is to run the pace that you are trying to achieve, your target workout pace, and then to get through the total mileage that's assigned for that day. Because as you gradually increase those number of repetitions and the mileage thereof, that's what it's all about in terms of preparing your body to gradually get better. And these adaptations that occur allow you to then push onward on each step of the program, moving up to additional speed repetitions each speed workout. But when it's hot, I have no problems in cutting the one mile repetitions to 800 meter or half mile repetitions and doing twice as many of them. For example, if you had a 10 times 1 mile workout schedule and it was already 75 or 80 degrees at the start and was going to warm up beyond that, I would not even hesitate, drop the repetition distance down to 800 meters, run twice as many of them, walk 3 minutes in between each, and try to keep that same pace per mile. So if the pace per mile that was assigned for the workout was 10 minutes per mile, that's 5 minutes per half mile,
mm-hmm.
then during the 800-meter repetitions, run 4:45 for that.
Gotcha. The other thing that jumps out when I look at the two schedules, the two finish and the for the time goal, is the last long run.
Yes.
You've got 26 mile on the two finish, but then if you're going to do this for time, you actually require a 29 miler.
Yes. The main reason for that, as offered in proof, is numerous surveys among people who used to run 20 miles and then moved up to our two finish program at 26 miles before the next marathon that they ran. The average improvement from making that 20-mile longest run up to 26 has been more than 15 minutes of improvement. And if you then take people who used to run 26 but want to improve, qualify for Boston, set a personal record, and move up to our recommended 29 miles 4 weeks before the marathon, the average improvement is, again, more than 11 minutes of improvement. 3 miles further, but 11 minutes of improvement on the average. That's a pretty good return on investment.
Absolutely. It sure is. Three additional miles. I've mentioned this before, but when you were e-coaching me late last year, you had me go from 26 up to 28, and just the mental part of that, when I remember lining up at the starting line at that marathon, was, you know, I can't even describe the mental piece of this. Like, you know, I'm not even running as long as I did 3 weeks ago.
It's empowering, isn't it?
It is. It absolutely is. Well, let's change topics again, Jeff. And as we start to pack on these longer miles, I'm guessing that our nutrition is also going to become a lot more important.
Absolutely.
Part of this. And you know, if you stop and look at it this way, one way to look at all this is that the marathon training program of yours, you're actually turning us all into endurance athletes.
Yes.
You know, 2, 3, 4, 5, some of us 6 hours on the road. Are there any specific eating guidelines that you recommend for endurance athletes? First of all, just like generically speaking, throughout any normal week.
Yeah, just day in and day out eating.
Sure.
I don't really get heavily into that because there are a whole lot of different individual issues with diet, and I never recommend that someone radically change their diet. And when I start recommending more specific things, some people change their diet radically and don't do well with that while they're training for a marathon. So what I recommend is pretty much sticking with the type of eating plan that has worked for you, as long as it has worked for you, and then maybe cut out some of the really more decadent foods like high saturated fat items. If you can cut down on those, you're going to help your health overall.
Mm-hmm.
But the main things that you need to look at eating-wise are the time periods leading up to the long runs and then finally the marathon itself, and then the recovery period after those long, strenuous workouts. The main concept is that it takes 36 to 48 hours for food you eat to be digested, metabolized, processed, and then be available for use by the muscles. So the day before long runs is not the time to try to improve your performance through eating. That's already in the bank. And so what you want to do is come up with an eating plan the day before that doesn't cause you to overeat and doesn't include any foods that tend to irritate your gut. And I recommend writing down in your journal various meals that you eat and then making comments if you've had problems with them during the run itself. And then you can fine-tune all of that eating plan. The major thing, though, is not to overeat in the afternoon or evening, because if you have too much food, then it's going to still be in your gut the next day. And when you're doing some of these long runs, you're bouncing up and down more than 50,000 times, and there are some embarrassing things that can happen when you have a full gut. So just look at foods that might be irritating, like high-fiber items. You may want to avoid those afternoon, evening, and fatty foods should be avoided, and then anything else that tends to irritate you. The morning of a run, most people don't need to eat anything. A lot of folks choose to for the comfort value. A couple of guidelines are that you want to try something bland that won't irritate you, and there are far more problems among people that eat the wrong foods or sometimes eat almost anything rather than people who don't eat anything. I have actually found that most people can avoid eating anything on the morning before a long run or race, and then they can keep their blood sugar level maintained if they will consume something every 2 miles as they go through their long runs working out a program of eating and drinking for the marathon itself.
Are you for or against sports drinks and gels and electrolyte supplements that are so popular today?
Most of the research and the practical aspects of the products you'll see on the nutrition front were developed for other sports. Gatorade set the tone, and it was developed for football players, and of course has been used in other sports. The fact is that when you run, your body is revving at a much higher level than in practically any other sport. A lot of the goos and gels, for example, were developed for cyclists. And what you really don't understand, a lot of people don't understand, is that in cycling, the system, even in very competitive cycling competitions, your digestive system really doesn't shut down that much. When you run, very little blood flow is available to be dispersed to the digestive area, and therefore very little blood goes there, and very little substance that you consume is going to be digested. So it really doesn't matter on a hot day how much fluid you have lost. Your stomach is simply not going to be able to absorb very much of what you put in it, and that even includes water. But when it comes to sports drinks, I can tell you from having heard now from over 300,000 runners that there is a very high percentage of those who drink sports drinks in long runs and marathons that have nausea. And since I'm against puking, I recommend drinking water during the long run. It simply cuts down the chance of having that problem. So you can consume some fluid, some water, and you should drink, and my rule of thumb is 2 to 4 ounces of water every 2 miles. That keeps you from over drinking, which can produce a very serious problem called hyponatremia, in which you wash sodium out of your system. And with 2 to 4 ounces every 2 miles, you should be in the safe range of consumption. The other substance that can be absorbed and is needed is sugar. Your brain, its only fuel source is blood glucose. And that supply will go down because when you run, you're going to use up some of that, even when you're at a high level of fat burning in a marathon. So as that blood sugar level goes down, the brain is going to cause increasing problems and secrete negative attitude hormones as it gets under stress from not getting its fuel. You can turn this all around by eating sugar products. The products that really have been best and absorb very quickly and get to the brain quicker and have caused fewer digestive problems have been pure forms of sugar, like sugar cubes or gummy bears or hard candies like Lifesavers. And I'm not sponsored by Lifesavers. wish I was, but yeah. Whatever.
Great. You've also put together a really interesting short video for the Disney Jeff Galloway training series I saw on food and drink, and I'll put the link to that in today's show notes. That's an interesting short clip as well.
The Disney people do such a good job with their video production and really in all their media stuff, and I'm very pleased to be associated with them. But those spots there about the various aspects of training have been heavily viewed, and I've gotten just so many good comments about what they did at the Run Disney site. I failed to mention with the sugar that I do have a rule of thumb that's 30 to 40 calories every 2 miles. So you can have your water with your sugar.
Each 2 miles, great. Last topic I want to talk about today before we get into a couple of questions I have are some running gadgets. My wife teases me that I look like a robot when I go out to run because I have a heart rate monitor, I have a GPS watch, I put my iPod on, and of course I have my Galloway interval timer. I don't know whether we consider that a gadget or something that's very necessary, but just overall, what are your thoughts on on running gadgets in particular? And are there any that are a lot more important than others?
Well, the Galloway timer, people tell me every single day that that is the one thing that has really gotten them into the habit and makes it so easy to take the walk breaks, because it beeps or vibrates for a walk and beeps or vibrates when it's time to run again. So that's one that that is really wonderful. Other than that, there are a lot of gadgets that that help people with individual issues. There are a lot of people that like heart rate monitors, for example. I personally have found with my Magic Mile and the guidelines that come from that, that most of the folks I work with don't even need to use heart monitors. And in fact, a lot of them that started out coming into our program with heart monitors have not had to use them. The other rule that has been associated with increased effort level that's very easy to use is the huff and puff rule. And the research shows that as you start to exert beyond your current capacity, your heart rate will go up at about the same rate that you will see in your huffing and puffing increase. So there's really a good way to relate that to huffing and puffing. Other than that, the GPS gadgets have been wonderful for people who don't have measured courses,
right,
and are traveling a lot. So that's it frees you up to be able to just wander around in various areas that are, of course, safe, and allow you to explore different things, and you know exactly how far you've gone afterwards. Beyond that, there are a lot of individual gadgets that people just love, and because they do, they simplify their running life.
Do you run with any of them in particular?
No, I don't. I do have an iFitness belt that I have learned to love. I used to hate wearing belts, but this is a new product. I've used it on several runs, including the Deadwood Marathon that I ran recently, and it snugs around your waist so that I really didn't feel that it was there, and it has smaller bottles, so it doesn't jostle around, doesn't ride up. It has a great expandable pouch that you can put your cell phone in, even the bigger phones now, and it also has a pouch for your key, and it's expandable, so you could put other stuff in there too.
So this particular belt that you use does have water bottles.
Yes, it does.
Or bottles on it. Gotcha.
Yes.
So you, these days, if you don't run with a GPS watch or a Nike Plus or any of those FootPod deals, do you you just run for time and not really care how far you run, or you've just done this so long you know exactly what you're doing?
That is the point.
Yeah.
In my first few years, I really did not have a good gauge of pace, but it's gotten so good now that I can look at what my total time is, and I can just about nail how far we've run for that period.
Great. Just a reminder that we're talking with Jeff Galloway, distance running expert and author of the Galloway Run, Walk, Run training method today. I had a couple of questions from listeners, if you don't mind taking a stab at a couple of these, Jeff. The first one is from Krister. He's actually a longtime listener from Sweden, so he might hold the record for being the farthest away. He was a holdout for a long time, but I'm happy to announce that Krister is now a Galloway convert.
Great.
He ordered the starter kit. He's got the book. He's got the which is interesting that he's he does his own podcast in English. It's a great podcast, but English is not his first language, so he does a great job at it. But he ordered your book in English and has digested that and is following along. But his question is, that he has heard you say in the past that your program calls for the runs during the week to be 30 minutes at least, at a minimum.
Yes.
And he was wondering, what's the best alternative to extend the distance or the time for each one of those weekday runs, or to run more than 3 days a week if he wants to increase his mileage?
Well, it's really based on individual schedule usually, and either way is fine. The one negative to adding more days is that the legs tend to be tireder the greater number of days that you run. A better solution, if you're going to add more runs to the week, is to do a morning run and an afternoon run. And that allows you to have enough days off from running to recover and even put cross training into those days while still adding extra mileage if you want to.
That's a great alternative I hadn't even thought of. Lastly, another listener, Cindy Pitts. She's from New York, and this may go back to our nutrition, but she's had a problem lately in the last few years, ever since she started running longer distances. And after she does a semi-long run, usually anything over 10 miles, she tends to get a headache after she quits. She's guessing that it might have something to do with what she's eating or not eating after her run, but she really has no idea. She's got a 12-miler scheduled and a 14-miler coming up, and she just is not looking forward to the end of it when she tends to get a headache. And she wants to know if you've come across that in any of your travels or talking to any other runners.
Very common, actually. I find that most of the runners that I quiz on this will admit that at least within a two-year period they've had at least one instance, but a lot of folks have it on a fairly regular basis. The main causes for headaches, as I have identified in the research on it, first of all, dehydration, which will occur. There's absolutely nothing you can do to keep yourself from being dehydrated, and low blood sugar, and heat. So all these things are things we have to deal with and will make us susceptible to the headache situation. Now, you lower the chance of getting them by going into your runs well hydrated and by slowing down the pace, particularly as it gets hotter, 30 seconds a mile slower for every 5 degrees above 60, and then to put a lot more walk breaks in. For example, if someone is getting a headache when they're using a 3-1, I would recommend going down to 1-1 or even 30-30. That in itself has eliminated headaches for several individuals that I know. Finally, talk to your doctor about an over-the-counter headache medication that you could take immediately after a run. I'm not a fan of taking any medication during a run simply because it can mess up your fluid balances, but immediately afterwards is a good time for most people, but you just need to ask your doctor about which one to take and the timing of that. That has also reduced the onset of these headaches.
Great. Some great suggestions. Cindy, give those a shot, and let us know how things go for you, will you? Well, thanks, Jeff. We've got episode 7 coming up in a few weeks, and that covers weeks 19, 20, and 21. We're going to do another magic mile. We're going to hit the 20-mile mark on our long run. And this one, I think, is going to be my favorite episode. We're going to talk on a topic that is near and dear to my heart, and that is running until you're 100.
Oh, man, that's my goal.
Running a marathon is icing on the cake, but now we're going to get into the cake, I think.
Yes.
The real reason for this. So and I've also got a couple of very special guests. I'm excited about our next episode. And also I want to touch upon a topic that you have mentioned in several of our episodes, kind of as a side note, but it's very important, and I want to talk about e-coaching opportunities directly with you.
Great. Well, I love my friendships that I developed through the e-coaching, and it's really a wonderful way that people find answers to their questions as they go through it. That's the purpose of it.
Well, we'll get into some of the specifics on the next episode, and once again, stay cool while you're down there in Texas, and I look forward to talking to you again, Jeff, and I appreciate your discussion today.
Same here, Kevin. You're doing a wonderful job.
Thanks. Have a good one. Thanks,
okay.
Jeff.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Although I have spoken to Jeff about some of these topics already in the past, or heard him on other podcasts or radio programs maybe even read what he's got to say about these topics in his books. Every time we talk about them, Jeff either adds something new that he didn't say before, or he puts a different spin on the answer that really helps drive his ideas home to me. So I really never tire of talking about any of these topics with Jeff. On the topic of eating for performance, if you get over to our website, www.thegallowayextramile.com, I will put in the show notes a link to the Run Disney video that Jeff and I discussed a little bit today. And although it's very short, I don't know, like maybe 3-4 minutes, sometimes it helps to get a visual when someone's trying to give you some advice. So I would urge you to check that out. We gave away a copy of Chris Russell's very good book, The Mid-Packer's Lament, just recently from our last episode, to fellow listener and friend Christine Elliott, who listens to this podcast all the way from Singapore. She ordered Jeff's book, Fit Kids, Smarter Kids, using the discount coupon from the last episode, and also tells me that she ordered a copy of Jeff's book, Running Until You're 100, for her father, as well as a book Jeff wrote on walking for her mom. What great gift ideas, huh? I've given several of Jeff's books to friends as well as loved ones. And seriously, what better way to tell someone that you care about them than to give them a gift that just might improve their quality of life? Speaking of quality of life, since my conversion to Run, Walk, Run, I am often asked what's the one thing about Run, Walk, Run that has impressed me the most. And although there are quite a few things that that I'm impressed with this whole program, there is one thing about Run, Walk, Run that is above all the others. It's something that I discovered while I was trying to merely finish a marathon. And it will stick with me forever. Let me ask you this question. What do all of these items have in common? Chocolate chip cookies, popsicles, artificial sweetener, Teflon, the microwave oven, potato chips, and Viagra. No, it's not what you think. Actually, every one of those items were discovered by accident. So, in episode 7 of the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition, we will discuss what I discovered about Run, Walk, Run by accident. In addition to talking with Jeff, I hope to have a couple other folks on the show that I think just might help you make the same accidental discovery as I did. So look for episode 7 in a few weeks. And in the meantime, please get over to our website, www.thegallowayextramile.com, for the show notes from today's show, as well as our email address, how to follow us at Facebook and on Twitter. And don't forget about our listener comment line, where I invite you to call and ask your questions or just tell us how your run, walk, run training is going these days. That comment line is area 206-339-8471. And until next time, y'all enjoy your extra mile.
Thanks for joining us on the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition. Please visit our website at www.thegallowayextramile.com to see the show notes for this episode of the podcast. You can email us with your feedback about the show at thegallowayextramile@gmail.com. If you'd like to send us your audio comments to let us know how your run, walk, run marathon training is going, please send an audio file to thegallowayextramile@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much for downloading the show, and we look forward to joining you again soon on the next edition of the Extra Mile Podcast, Galloway Edition. Walk break.